WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
All right. We're giving our neighbor a joyride. Let's get on with it. Anyone want to go on a joyride with us? How about you?
Dennis Hopper made his comeback in the 1986 film Blue Velvet, confirming that he was brilliant at acting crazy. You can see him now in two crazy killer roles, in the independent film Red Rock West and the big summer thriller Speed. Here he is in Speed as the mad bomber.
What do you think, Jack? You think if you pick up all the bus driver's teeth, they'll give you another medal? Jeez. You think I wouldn't have been prepared? 2 years I spent setting up that elevator job. 2 years I invested myself in it. You couldn't understand the kind of commitment that I have. You were in a man's life's work, and you think you can walk away. You got blinders on to the world. But I got your attention now, didn't I, Jack?
Why didn't you just come after me?
No, this is about me. This is about my money. This is about money due me, which I will collect. $3.7 million. It's my nest egg, Jack. At my age, you've got to think ahead.
On this archive edition of Fresh Air, we're featuring a 1990 interview with Dennis Hopper. Just a few years before Hopper's comeback, he was institutionalized, paranoid, and totally disoriented from years of drugs and booze. Hopper started acting in movies when he was a teenager and had a small part in Rebel Without a Cause. In 1969, he became famous for directing and co-starring in the counterculture road movie Easy Rider. Now he's reestablished himself as a director as well as an actor. He directed Colors and The Hotspot. We talked first about Hopper's role as Frank Booth in David Lynch's Blue Velvet. Frank Booth is a crazy, dangerous character, but when Hopper read the script, he said to Lynch, "I am Frank."
I didn't have a problem with Frank. I just understood him. And I called David. I'd never met David, and he'd given me the part, and I called him. He was down in North Carolina already. They'd begun filming. And I said, "You don't have to worry about this. I am Frank. I really understand this role." So he got off the phone. He told Isabella and Kyle MacLachlan and Laura that, he said, "My God, I just got off the phone with Dennis Hopper." And he said he was Frank. He said, "That may be great for the movie, but how are we going to have lunch with him?" But I really meant that I understood the role. And I do understand Frank. You know, I've known Frank. I've known a lot of guys like Frank.
Did you think that you were like Frank at some point in your life?
Well, I understood his sexual obsession, you know. And I, even though David wrote it as the stuff that he was sniffing as helium, I had always thought of it as some sort of drug, you know, like an amyl nitrate or a nitric oxide. And I asked David if it would be all right to play it that way. He had helium on the set, and the helium, all helium does, it doesn't disorient your mind. All it does is make you sound like Daffy Duck. So I tried it, and I said, "David, I'm really aware. I'm just hearing my voice. I'm not, you know, able to act." I said, "I want something. Couldn't I try to use something that, like, disoriented my mind?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "Well, watch this. I do a sense memory of an amyl nitrate, nitric oxide or something." He said, "What are those things?" I said, "Just watch." So anyway, he liked what he saw. And I said, "If you want to dub that voice in the helium voice in later, we could do that." And he said, "No, I don't think it'll be necessary." Anyway, we didn't dub it in later, and it did work. But, you know, since then, I started thinking how strange it would be if I'd used that helium voice and not had it disorient my mind. What a strange character he had actually written, even more stranger than my portrayal of Frank.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
You know, it's just been this guy who takes this, that does this mask and gets this weird voice and then does all those things and nothing else happens to him. It would be very bizarre. But anyway, because when I read it, I thought of it that way, of the drug kind of drug-crazed guy and the sexual kind of strange appetite that he had. I could identify with those things.
Do you like roles with the kind of intensity that your performance has in the character of Frank?
Well, like, you know, I think that probably of all the work that I've done, Frank is probably the flashiest role I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And I like it on that level. Yeah.
You grew up on a farm. Were you anxious to get away when you were growing up?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to know where the trains were going. I had a wonderful childhood, though. My mother ran a swimming pool in Dodge City, Kansas, and I lived with my grandparents. My father was at war in the Second World War, and I lived with my grandparents on a small farm, and then my grandfather worked on a larger farm in Garden City, Kansas, and a wheat farm that I would go out and work on during the summer. And I had a wonderful childhood on that level.
Your mother was very religious. She was a fundamentalist?
Yeah. I don't know where that sort of started. My mother is religious, yeah.
What was your attitude about God?
I mean, when I was younger, she wasn't as religious as she became later in my life. I wasn't raised under any great pressure as her being a fundamentalist when I was a young kid. So that's sort of gotten distorted.
So there wasn't, there weren't...
religious pressures?
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I could wear lipstick and I could dress as a girl anytime I wanted to. Is that what you mean? Things like that? Yeah, and I was allowed to dance on the table and so on. No, I...
Took the words out of my mouth.
Thanks, yeah. Wait till I put this lipstick on, will you? No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have those kind of pressures. I went to Sunday school and things like that, but I didn't have a lot of pressures in those ways. When I first saw my first movies when I was a kid, they really affected me, and I wanted to know how they were made, and I'm not sure that that's uncommon for any kid who first sees his films or first sees television or whatever.
We're featuring a 1990 interview with Dennis Hopper. We'll be back with more after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Dennis Hopper. Your first movie role was in Rebel Without a Cause. You were, I think, 18 years old. Did the movie help give you a sense of teenagers being their own culture and their own misunderstood culture? Were you already feeling that way?
When I went on that picture, I saw James Dean for the first time act, and at that point, all I was concerned about was being an actor. I wasn't concerned about, like, you know, whether people were juvenile delinquents or not. I had sort of come out of that, out of San Diego and Tijuana and that kind of area, but I was interested in acting, and I saw James Dean act, and I basically, through Rebel Without a Cause, I was just trying to figure out what he was doing, because I thought I was the best young actor at that time in the world, and I suddenly ran into this guy who was some years older than me, but he was doing work that I was so far over my head, I actually grabbed him on the Chicky Run and threw him into a car and said, "What are you doing? You got to teach me what you're doing."
So what did he teach you?
He wanted to know what my motivation was for wanting to act. Yeah. And he asked me if I'd had a problem with my parents, that if I had actually hated my parents, and that that was part of the drive that I had to want to become an actor. And I said that actually I had felt that. And he said, well, that's what he felt also, and that his mother died when he was very young, and he used to go to her grave and cry on her grave and say, "Mother, why have you left me? Why have you left me?" And that turned into, "I'm going to show you, I'm going to show you, I'm going to be someone." And that was the drive that he had brought into his acting, which I described the same sort of feelings that I was misunderstood by my parents, and that I had that feeling when they came to the theater that I was going to show them. And it was like, you know, I'm going to show you, I'm going to be something, I'm going to be an actor. So this drive, this confused kind of drive and wanting to put it into other people's other parts and other things, and these feelings, to use them in some sort of imaginary given circumstance, became the key for acting. But anyway, he said, "You must learn how to not worry about the emotions, but you must learn how to do things and not show them. You must learn how to smoke a cigarette and just not act smoking the cigarette. You must learn how to drink a drink, not act drinking the drink." And if somebody knocks on the door, you go and answer the door. Then you see they have a gun in their hand. Then you react to the gun and so on. So basically, it's like don't indicate, but like do something and don't show it. And moment-to-moment reality. Never anticipate what the next moment's going to hold. And so, like, you know, he said, and, you know, you're a very good technical actor, so get rid of all that technique, though. Stop the line readings. Don't worry about how it's going to come out. Just let it come out. Work on a moment-to-moment reality level.
Stop the line readings. What did you stop doing?
Well, I mean, like, you know, I was out of a classical theater background, so, I mean, there were ways of reading lines, you know. I mean, even hello, how are you became a way of reading a line. So there's a lot of ways to say hello, how are you, besides one fixed way that you decide in your room somewhere that that's the way you're going to say hello, how are you.
Was James Dean the first friend that you had who died? I mean, like someone of around your age.
Yeah, I mean, there had been, I would think, yeah.
Did it scare you a lot to have someone who
was
close to you?
Well, it was more, I mean, more than a friend. I think of him more as a teacher than as a friend. We did two films together, which took about a year of our lives. He only made three movies. We did Rebel Without a Cause and then Giant. And then he died 2 weeks before we finished shooting Giant. So I was like 19, he was 24. It was more, we dealt with acting. We talked about acting. It wasn't like we went out and drank beers together and got high or like race cars or anything. When he died, it just destroyed me because I totally had this belief in destiny and how people are destined, you know, to be, to fulfill their destiny, you know, and I just couldn't understand why James Dean had died so young. He wanted to direct movies. He had only been in three movies, and it just destroyed my whole concept of destiny, life, and that kind of thing for years. I mean, probably still, till this day, it still bothers me. I miss him. I wish I'd have seen his work.
Dennis Hopper is my guest. There's a kind of, I think, pretty famous story about what happened, an incident that happened in your early career. And you were working on a movie that Henry Hathaway was directing, and he was trying to get you to do the scene the way he wanted to. You had your own way of wanting to do it. And I think this went on for like 12 hours or something of you doing takes and him insisting that you do it his way.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finally won.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of your rebelliousness that you were pretty much exiled from Hollywood for a while. Is that
yeah,
right?
For a long time. Till he rehired me again.
Till he rehired you again.
Yeah, 7 or 8 years later.
So did you end up doing a lot of TV in that period?
Yeah.
I recently saw you on The Rifleman. I think it was the first episode.
Right. You know, Sam Peckinpah wrote the pilot of The Rifleman, which I did.
Oh, so it was the pilot I saw.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, you know, now that you're directing again, if you ever see yourself in the Henry Hathaway role of really wanting the actor to do it your way.
I don't see myself any other way.
You mean you see...
Did I hear a pause?
Yeah. So
did you hear a pin drop?
So
no, I'm the director, so I want them to do it my way.
So if you saw the young Dennis Hopper coming in and he insisted on doing it his way, what would have happened?
I would have probably been amazed by the young Dennis Hopper and let him do it his way. But I would have never let him know that he was doing it. I mean, I would have given him plenty of space to do it his way. Hathaway didn't. But if it comes down to doing it my way, I mean, it's got to be my way. But, like, I give actors a lot of room to work. I mean, I never had a problem with Sean Penn. I never had a problem with Robert Duvall. I had problems with Don Johnson. But I don't have problems seeing what I got on the screen with Don Johnson because we worked it out and he did it my way.
What kind of problems did you have with him?
Well, I just found him, like, not a a steady actor, you know, at times, you know, and like that we had to work really hard to get him to like be real, to do things real, and so on. And we did work hard, and Don worked very hard on this, and it's a great performance by Don. He's never been better than he is in the hot spot. The director is the boss, and that's just the way it is. So Hathaway, I learned that from Hathaway. Also, I learned a lot of things from Hathaway. I did three films for Hathaway. He was the boss, and the director is the boss. And if you're in a director's movie and you don't do what the director wants you to do, you might as well, it doesn't matter how good you are, you look like you're out of step with everybody else, and you might as well just hang it up right there, because it's no sense fighting him.
I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Dennis Hopper, recorded in 1990. This is Fresh Air.